God saw that it was good. And God said, let the earth sprout vegetation, plants yielding seed, and fruit trees bearing fruit in which is in their seed, each according to its kind on the earth. And it was so. The earth brought forth vegetation, plants yielding seed according to their own kinds, and trees bearing fruit in which is in their seed, each according to its kind. God saw that it was good. And there was an evening, and there was a morning, the third day. And God said, let there be lights in the expanse of the heavens to separate the day from the night. And let them be for signs and seasons and for days and for years. And let there be lights in the expanse of the heavens to give light upon the earth. And it was so. God made two great lights. The greater light to rule the day. And the lesser light to rule the night. And the stars. God set them in the expanse of the heavens to give light unto the earth, to rule over the day and over the night, and to separate the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. And there was an evening, there was a morning, the fourth day. And God said, let the waters swarm with swarms of living creatures, and let birds fly over the earth across the expanse of the heavens. So God created the great sea creatures and every living creature that moves, with which the waters swarm according to their kind, and every winged bird according to its kind. God saw that it was good. God blessed them, saying, be fruitful and multiply, and fill the waters and the seas, and let birds multiply on the earth. And there was an evening and a morning, the fifth day. And God said, let the earth bring forth living creatures according to their kinds, livestock and creeping things, and beasts on the earth according to their kinds. And so, God made the beasts of the earth according to their kinds, and the livestock according to their kinds, and everything that creeps on the ground according to its kind. God saw that it was good. Then God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the heaven, and over the livestock, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. So God created man in his image, and in the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. And God blessed them. God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens and over every living thing that moves on the earth. And God said, behold, I have given you every plant yielding seed that is on the face of the earth, and every tree with its seed and its fruit. You shall have them for food. And to every beast of the earth, and to every bird of the heavens, and to everything that creeps on the earth, everything that has the breath of life, I have given every green plant for food. So, when God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And it was evening, and it was morning. It's good to be with you this morning. Kevin first contacted me a number of months ago about coming. Tabitha and I were very excited. There's so many people in this audience that mean so much to us, and it's an honor for us to spend time with all of you. We'll discuss a little bit of that more tonight, have some more personal comments to make, because tonight's lesson through Wednesday night will be a little more laid back than this lesson this morning. Because this morning I want us to concentrate on the power of God. And the title of this lesson is called Adam and the Power of God. And you know what? There's probably no better passage in all of Scripture to talk about the power of God than the passage we just read. The word God is used 32 times in this passage. This passage describes God creating everything from nothing. And this is not the only time in the Bible in which God's power is discussed. You realize that practically the Bible is just story after story after story of God's power. People are fed through the power of God. Storms erupt and storms die by the power of God. The blind can see, the lame can walk. People who die can live again. And because of the time of this lesson, it might seem natural for us to spend our entire time in this passage. However, This is not the Adam that I'm referring to. Do you realize there's actually another Adam in the Bible? That's what I want to talk about this morning. If you didn't realize there's another Adam in the Bible, that's okay. That's why we're here. But hopefully by the time that we leave, you'll recognize it and be able to study it. So let's look at that Adam. Let's look at Joshua, the third chapter. While you turn there, let me set this up a little bit. In Genesis, the 12th chapter, God made a promise to Abraham. Maybe he made three promises, however you want to look at it. But part of the promise he made to Abraham was that he would give Abraham's family a land. And years later, the family of Abraham eventually moved to Egypt. They were down there for a very long time. While they were there, but they became slaves to the Egyptians. And finally, time came for God to deliver his people from the Egyptians. And by the power of God, there were 10 plagues. And by the power of God, the Red Sea parted, and the Israelites walked on dry ground as they left Egypt. And over the next 40 years, by the power of God, these same people were led by God. They were provided food by God. God protected them. And again, by his power, he provided guidance to them in the form of law. So here we are poised on the Jordan River, ready to enter the promised land. For a delivery on a promise that he had made to Abraham so long ago. And that's what brings us to Joshua chapter 3. Joshua 3. Then Joshua rose early in the morning, and they set out from Shunem. And they came down to the Jordan, he and all the people of Israel, and lodged there before they passed over. And at the end of 3 days, the officers went through the camp and commanded the people, as soon as you see the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God being carried by the Levitical priest, then you shall set out from your place and follow it. Yet there shall be a distance between you and it, about 2,000 cubits in length. Do not come near it, in order that you may know the way you shall go, for you have not passed this way. Then Joshua said to the people, consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do wonders among you. Then Joshua said to the priest, take up the Ark of the Covenant and pass before the people. So they took up the Ark of the Covenant and went. The Lord said to Joshua, today I will begin to exalt you in the sight of all Israel, that you may know that as I was with Moses, so I will be with you. And as for you, command the priest to bear the Ark of the Covenant. When you come to the brink of the waters of the Jordan, you shall stand still in the Jordan. Joshua said to the people of Israel, come here and listen to the words of the Lord your God. Joshua said, here is how you shall know that the living God is among you, and that he will without fail drive out from before you the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Hivites, the Perizzites, the Girgashites, the Amorites, and the Jebusites. Behold, the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of all the earth is passing over before you into the Jordan. Therefore, take 12 men from the tribes of Israel, from each man a tribe, and with the soles of the feet of the priest bearing the Ark of the Lord of all the earth, shall rest in the waters of the Jordan. The waters of the Jordan shall be cut off from flowing, and the waters coming down shall stand still in one heap. So when the people sat out from their tents to pass over the Jordan, with the priest bearing the Ark of the Covenant before the people, and as soon as those bearing the ark had come to as far as the Jordan, and the feet of the priest bearing the ark were dipped in the brink of the water, now the Jordan overflows all its banks throughout the time of harvest. The waters coming down from above stood rose up in a heap very far away at Adam, the city that is by the side of Zarephath. And those flowing down from the sea of the salt sea, were completely cut off, and the people passed over opposite Jericho. Now the priest bearing the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stood firmly on dry ground in the midst of the Jordan. And all Israel was passing over on dry ground until all the nation finished passing over the Jordan. I'm sure all of you have read this passage a number of times in your own study. And hopefully, this time the word Adam jumped out at you. Of course, this is not the name of a person, but of a place. And it's a place in which the power of God is on wonderful display of all of us. It's interesting, the phrases and stuff that are in our Bible. I don't know how many of you have done this, but I've read this passage a number of times. And when it comes to little phrases like that, about stood up and peep at Adam, and into the city, or I just kind of gloss right over that. I just kind of bypass right over that. You know what? That's extra material. I don't need to know that. I've got the story. The story is that God allowed the people to cross the Jordan River. I don't need to know all the little details. So the thing to remember is that all the words that we have in our Bible are inspired by God. Every single word. And although I don't understand totally the mind of God, I'm willing to guess that He didn't just add extra words just for the fun of it. Every word that's in there means something. And it's up to us to understand exactly what that means. And so in this case, I want to help you understand what this phrase means. And in doing so, hopefully you'll have a better understanding of the power of God in this situation. So let's set this up. The people, as you know, they have left Egypt. And they've come a long way. They wandered in the wilderness for 40 years. And now they are approaching the Jordan River. They're approaching the land of Canaan. And they have encamped in the northern place of Moab, on the eastern side of the Jordan River. And across the river, they can see the city of Jericho. They can see it over there. And but of course, between here and there is a river. The Jordan River runs between them. And so, in fact, it's interesting that as they came there, the people of Jericho had heard about the Israelites. Look over chapter 2, verse 8. This is when the spies, remember they sent spies into Jericho, and Rahab had hit them. Starting at verse 8, it said, "Before the men lay down, she came up to them on the roof and said, 'I know the Lord has given you the land, and that the fear of you has fallen all upon us, and that all the inhabitants of the land melt away before you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea before you when they came out of Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan, to Sihon and Og, whom you devoted to destruction. As soon as we heard it, our hearts melted, and there was no spirit left in any man because of you. For the Lord your God, He is God of the heavens and of the earth." So the people of Jericho, at least Rahab's family, they had heard about what had happened over on the other side of the Jordan. And so, but when they're there, they still have sort of a sense of complacency about what's going on. Let me show you a couple pictures here. This picture is of Tel El Kufar. Let me explain what that means. Explain the first word first. Tel is a word that means an artificial mountain. What happens over centuries as people have moved into areas? They'll come to an area and they'll want to settle there. Maybe there's water there, there's good protection or something. And they'll build a city. And they'll live there for a while. But then time passes. And for one reason or another, maybe they're conquered by another people, or maybe they just decide to move and abandon the site. There's no one living there. The ruins that they built, the buildings that they built crumble, and they just lie in ruins. Dust blows in and kind of covers those rocks. And then, years later, another group of people moved in. Again, a great place to live. We're going to build a city here. So they build a city there. Eventually they move. Years pass, they close. Dust, the ground, the hill grows a little bit more. This process happens over and over and over again. Some cities over in Israel has happened a lot. Megiddo has been conquered, destroyed, and rebuilt over 23 times. But the same thing happened here in Jericho. A number of times, people lived here and then left, and then this hill grew up over time. And so that's what a tell is. This is called Tel El Sutar. This is the site of Old Testament Jericho. For those of you who taught the class before about the Israelites walking around the city once each day for 6 long days, you always wonder how big the city is where you're looking at it right now. It was that hill that they walked around. And when you visit the site today, you can see a number of things. For instance, let's see, there we go. They have a lot of, they've uncovered a number of things there. In fact, they've uncovered a lot of walls of Jericho. What you're looking at there on the very bottom, those walls, those clay walls, actually date 200 years before Joshua and the story that we're reading right now, before they came into the land. So those walls down here at the bottom were 200 years old when Joshua came. It's amazing what's over there. By the way, I'll talk about this a little more. They have a different definition of old than we do. What's old over there is not the same thing as old as up here. That's some of the things that you can see over there. This is you're standing on top of the hill, now you're looking toward the west. And these are some of the hills up in the wilderness of Judea. And interestingly enough, these hills are actually mentioned in Scripture. If you read on in chapter 2, go down to verse 15. Rahab is starting to send the spies away, and she says, "Then she let them down by a rope through the window, for her house was built into the city wall, so that she lived in the wall." And she says to them, "Go into the hills, or the pursuers will encounter you, and hide there 3 days until the pursuers have returned." So she instructs them to go up into these hills right here. And the reason is because from that vantage point, they'll be able to see over the city of Jericho. And when the men from the city had come back to the city because they couldn't find them, they would know it, and they'd be able to come down there and go back to the city. So see, these hills sit just west of the city. This picture is actually taken from Mount Nebo, from the top of Mount Nebo. So this is actually over, you're now east of the Jordan River, looking toward the west. And what you have here is the plains of Moab down here. This is where the Israelites would have been encamped in this story that we're talking about. And of course, farther west of that, what you have is the valley, small valley, where the Jordan River flows right through here. And what you're seeing back over here, this is modern-day Jericho. Now, modern-day Jericho is a much bigger city than Jericho. There's about 80,000 people that live in Jericho. The ancient city of Jericho, the picture I showed you a little while ago, was sitting inside here, much, much smaller area. But, of course, this is the setting for this. And if we look at this from the other side, now we're standing on the tell at Jericho, looking toward the east. And I like this picture because the city of Jericho, many times in the scripture, is mentioned as the city of palm trees. It's called the city of palms. And even today, you can see palm trees all over the city. But this is the view, for instance, that you would have if you're looking toward the east. And I know it's a little hazy, but these hills over here, and this land right over here, is actually on the other side of the Jordan River. Even the current Hasmonite kingdom of Jordan. Look at this picture. If you were a soldier or a citizen of Jericho and you look to the east, you would be able to see the Israelites over there. By this time, the Israelites were a couple of million. I've heard judges from 1 million to 4 million. It really doesn't matter. It's a lot of people. Plus their animals and their tents and the smoke rising from their sacrifices. And they were here for 40 days. Remember, Moses died, and then they stayed here 30 days mourning Moses. So they were there for a long time. And the people of Jericho, from this vantage point, can look across the Jordan River, and they can see him. And of course, they heard stories about these people. One of the things you don't realize until you actually go over there, see some of these stories. The Bible doesn't tell us that the citizens of Jericho could see the Israelites over there. But it's obvious when you visit, there's no way that happens. I mean, Jericho was only a few thousand people in size. Maybe 10, 20,000 people. Wow, there were a couple of million. There's no way they could not have stood here and looked across and seen them over there. But they're not concerned. They've heard the stories and they know what God can do, but there is a sense of complacency. And the reason is because there's water between Jericho and where these people are. The Jordan River is there. We think about rivers differently than they did in ancient times. If you were to leave today and drive to Denver, you would spend any time at all thinking, how am I going to cross the Mississippi River? How am I going to cross that? You wouldn't think about that. The reason is because there are 150 bridges across the Mississippi River. You wouldn't think about how we're going to cross it. You're going to think, where are we going to cross it? Well, in ancient times, water was a barrier. I mean, you might be able to get a few people across the Jordan River, but there's no way you're going to get 2 million people across the river. Or at least a huge army. It can't be done. So even though they've heard the stories, they're a little complacent. And when you visit this area today, you get, kind of get a false impression of the story here. This is a picture of the Jordan River taken today. This is very close to the site of where Jesus was baptized in the Jordan River. But if you look at this, the Jordan River is only about 15 or 20 feet wide. It's very, very deep. The reason it looks like this is because of population growth. Over the last 100 years, the countries of Jordan and the West Bank and Israel have had huge population growth. And so they need more water. People are thirsty. They use the water that's going into the tributaries for consumption and to water their crops and to feed their animals. It's not being wasted. They're using it the way they should use it. It's just that when you got more people, you need more water. And because water is not reaching the tributaries, the water from the tributaries is not getting into the Jordan River. And the Jordan River has shrunk considerably over the last 100 years. In fact, right now, when you visit this place, the water is barely flowing. This site's probably about 2 miles north of the northern edge of the Dead Sea. But the water is barely flowing. But as I said, this is not the way it always looked. It's certainly not the way it looked during the time of the story that we're reading. This picture was taken in 1920. The bridge you see there is the Allendale Bridge. There's about three or four different crossings where you go from Israel over to Jordan. And this is one of them. This picture was taken, as I said, in the 1920s. The current bridge going across here, the current Allendale Bridge is about four lanes wide. You know, it's a big modern-day bridge. But there's a couple things I want you to notice about this picture. First of all, notice how wide those Jordan River is. I mean, we don't even have the whole width in this picture. And of course, when it's this wide, you know it's flowing pretty good. In fact, you can kind of see some ripples down here as it's flowing along. And look, the second thing I want you to notice is look at the distance between the top of the surface of the water. What is that? That's probably 15 feet or so, maybe more. This would have been much more representative of what the Jordan River looked like during the time that we're reading about from Joshua to Joshua. It was much, much more difficult to cross. Almost impossible. But then, again, there's another little phrase in here that we're given about this story. Look at this. Look at Joshua 3, verse 15. Verse 15 says, "And as soon as those bearing the ark had come as far as the Jordan, and the feet of the priests bearing the ark were dipped in the brink of the water." Now the Jordan overflows all the banks. So what the author is telling us here is that, hey, this took place during the time of harvest. Was that significant? Yes, it is. Absolutely. Remember, every phrase that's given to us has a reason for being. Yeah, it's significant. We're going to talk about this more tonight. We're going to talk about how the rain falls in the land. But during the time of harvest, the water that has fallen up in Mount Hermon and in Galilee has now flowed down the Jordan River. And by the time it gets down here, the water has overflowed its banks and does this every single year. Here's another picture taken again about 100 years ago in the 1920s of the Jordan River at the time of harvest. Look at the river now. What's this like? 3/4 of a mile across? Huge. Remember the picture I showed you two slides ago of the Allendale Bridge? That bridge is in this picture.
Can you see that?
Remember what we talked about? The distance between the top of the water and the bottom of the bridge was like 15 or 20 feet. Look at it now. The water right there at the surface of the bridge. This is what Israelites were facing when they were going to cross the Jordan. This is what they were facing. This is why the people in Jericho had heard the story, but they were not concerned. There is no way anybody can come across this river like this. But of course we know because they did. And that leads us to Ab. A couple of the presentations I have this week, today since 9 weeks, are sermons that have like about 30-minute intro and a 3-minute lesson. So what we just said, that's the intro. We've now got to Adam. Let's look at this passage. Let's look at this passage again. Joshua 3, 14 through 16. So when the people set out from their tents to pass over the Jordan, with the priests bearing the Ark of the Covenant before the people, and as soon as those bearing the Ark had come as far as the Jordan, and the feet of the priests bearing the Ark were dipped in the brink of the water, now the Jordan overflows all the time. The waters coming down from above stood and rose up in a heap very far away at Adam, the city that beside Zarephath, and those flowing down toward the sea of the Arba, the salt sea was completely cut off. And the people passed over opposite Jericho. I know what you're thinking. When you read this story, this is what you're thinking. Right? So this is a water crossing, just like what we see Charles Manson in the Ten Commandments. When he's standing there on the edge of the Red Sea, that's what, growing up, I just equated this story with that. Even though I knew it was in a totally different place, but that's the way you think about it. But that's not what happened. That's not what happened. It tells us that when the priest went and stood in the water, that the water rose up in a heap at Adam. So where is Adam? Well, here we are. Here's our map again. Jericho, of course, the Jordan River runs, of course, north to south through the land. Jericho sits on the western side of the Jordan. And, of course, they're encamped here on the eastern side of the Jordan. Adam is located up here. And if you read the scripture, it says that the water was stopped up here at Adam. And it was stopped, and that the water from Adam dried out all the way to the Sea of Arba, the salt sea, the Dead Sea. The power of God was amazing. The power of God stopped water and dried up 14 miles of river. 14 miles of river. And he held back the water. See, the phrases that we have in the Bible, as I said, are there for a purpose. We're to understand why God did such things. We're to understand how God did such things. I mean, it's one thing to just read the story and say, well, and to think about it the same way if you think about the Red Sea. Because, let's admit it, that's an incredible story as well of the power of God. But this is one of those stories that if you don't look at the details, I think you're doing yourself a disservice because you miss out on understanding the full power of God. 14 miles of river were dried up because God was holding back the waters at Adam. I'm not really going to describe the power of God to you. Think about the things in our Bible. Genesis, the first chapter. God raising the dead, feeding people. All the things that God can do is that the power of God, we read story after story after story in Scripture about it. But we have access to the power of God. The power of God is not just limited to what you read in the Bible. The power of God works today. And the reason I know that is because I see all of you here. And I see the smiles on your faces. You know what the power of God can do. The power of God has the ability to save all of us. And even though this lesson actually wasn't about what we all need to do to be saved, it all happens because of the power of God. If you have a need to pray, you have to come to pray.